Hey, everybody, it's Brian Dodd with the Pursuit of Service podcast. So thrilled you're joining us this month. I think we're really going to help you today. Jeff, you know, there was just something he wanted to talk about. I'm going to throw in my two cents, but Jeff's really the one carrying this and really the champion of this topic. But it's things leaders can do to disqualify themselves. And look, if you're listening to this podcast, you want to be the best leader you can be. You want to have as much influence as possible. You want to make it the biggest impact you can while you have that leadership position or prepare for a leadership position, and you don't want to disqualify yourself. So today is going to help a lot of people. It's going to protect a lot of leaders. It's going to benefit a lot of teams as you'll learn what not to do as a leader. So sit back, get ready to take some notes, however you do that, and welcome to this month's edition of the Pursuit of Service podcast.
Welcome back, Brian. Back and better than ever.
That's right, Jeff. How are you doing, my friend?
Very good. It's a busy springtime, which is awesome because the weather's turning, taking my little guy camping like I did last night, and just doing all the fun things. Looking forward to summer.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question, because I don't know the answer to this, but you do a lot of tough mutters and marathons and those type. Does the season pick up when the weather gets warmer and there's more and more of those things, or is it just all year round?
Yeah, it's between, you know, early summer and late fall where it's the temperature is mild enough. A lot of the real, you know, a lot of the real strong ones, like the half Ironman, are in the spring and the fall. So you're not doing like a true endurance event right in the heat of summer. I mean, sometimes they are, but they typically tend to fall in the spring and in the summer. And then, yeah, some of the tough mutters might be sprinkled throughout the winter. But I mean, there's running races too. You know, like I think the Atlanta, the Hotlanta half marathon is sometime in June or July. So they're sprinkled throughout, definitely. And obviously it'll taper off in the winter.
Okay. Well, listeners, this is the rumor on Jeff. I've never competed against him, and I will not. So let me just go ahead and tell all y'all that. The word is he can run you into the ground if you're not careful. So that's the word on the street. So
No comment.
Yes. Jeff's also very humble. So, well, let's talk about the opposite or the antithesis of humility. And that's things that leaders can do to actually hurt their influence, ultimately make it to the point of disqualifying themselves. So Jeff, I know this was a topic that you really wanted to discuss today. I'll try to add to the conversation, but I know that it's really on your heart and mind. So yeah, kind of tell us, number one, how you came to this, and then let's just start diving into the content.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're very positive people. So we're always trying to think about what are those things that make us a good leader? How do we communicate? How can we care for others? How can we cast vision? How can we organize and manage and coach and all those sort of things? But there's a lot to be learned from seeing what's wrong, watching wrong to know what's right. So I was just kind of thinking about and not quite meditating on, but sort of just thinking about some of the past experiences I've had with leaders where I really learned, boy, this is not, whenever I lead something in the future, this is not, you know, what I'm going to do or what I'm going to see, just because you can tell. So that's kind of where this came from. So we'll each share three. And importantly, we'll talk about sort of the antithesis of that, or the solution, or the anecdote.
Yeah.
To that poison at each one. And the reason for that is, you know, so we all have blind spots, and sometimes we may not be aware of some of these things. So these are just three things, the anecdotes that will keep you to make sure that you're not falling into one of these disqualifiers. By disqualifier, if you're doing these type of things and people aren't going to want to follow you regardless, and you may be temporarily in charge, but you're really going to short circuit your success.
Yeah. So Jeff, before we get into point number one, I mean, I don't want to hijack this or take this down a road, but you just said something that piqued my interest. You can learn a lot by watching what's wrong. Why do leaders have such a hard time seeing what's wrong in themselves? And how can they fix that? And then we'll get into the list a little bit.
That's a great question. There are two main reasons. One of them is lack of humility. Okay, so this doesn't necessarily mean someone's completely arrogant, but to truly be humble is to consider yourself to some extent almost unworthy of whatever it is, which causes self-reflection, right? Yeah. So part of it is the state of the heart and the posture of the heart, and that if I'm not intentionally looking at, hey, where could I be going wrong here? You'll just assume that you're perfect, basically. And then the second one is sometimes you, even then, even if you're looking genuinely and sincerely inside, you don't know how you're coming across to other people, things like that. And we're all human beings, so we all make mistakes unintentionally all the time. So sometimes it's just a plain, honest blind spot.
Yeah. So it's either hubris or blind spots.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, if that being said, all right, ladies and gentlemen, let's have some humility as Jeff starts this list, and let's try to take an honest look in the mirror. So Jeff, number one, give us number one.
So one thing that will disqualify your ability to lead is that if you don't address problems directly.
Okay.
All right. So this means you procrastinate, you don't address things. This could also mean you don't address them directly with whoever is having the issue or whatever the issue is, but you talk behind people's backs, or you try to play politics or puppeteer without, you know, even confronting the source of the problem. And this ranges everywhere from interpersonal issues to performance issues or operational issues. No matter what it is, if you're not addressing that directly with, you know, wherever the source of the problem is, number one, people are going to notice it, right? And then any accountability and standards are out the window because you're not addressing it. Number two, you're going to undermine the trust that folks have in you, especially if you're talking behind people's back and, you know, with one person you're saying this and with another you're saying something totally different. People are going to notice those things and lose trust as well.
Okay. You know, it's interesting, and I'm just going to be transparent. Here's one of my challenges is, you know, I'm not a conflict guy at all. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, I'm just going to hope the problem goes away. Yeah. Or maybe it's not that serious. I don't want to make a big deal about anything, you know, these type of things, be seen as a micromanager, you know, that type of thing. And the reality is, if you don't do those things, you know, it can escalate over time. So, you know, talk about what's kind of the antidote to that.
Yeah. And I think to your point, we all feel that way, right? Like most people don't inherently enjoy conflict or confrontation. And, you know, sometimes things do go away, but our bias should be towards solving a problem, not, you know, the false hope that it goes away. But that's something we all struggle with.
Yeah.
And myself included. So the antidote to that, which I'll share with you, then I'll share your story as an example.
Okay.
Is to hold open forums, ask questions. Right. So if you have these sort of town hall type things, town hall doesn't have to be your whole company or anything like that, but give people the opportunity to provide feedback. And then where there are problems, set up a private meeting, a private phone call with the individual. Again, interpersonal, operational, performance, tardiness, whatever the case may be. If there's an issue, address it with them privately and personally. And ultimately, I mean, all these things are uncomfortable, right? Like, hey, team, we need to talk about openly with all 2, 3, 5, 10, 15 of us, however big your team is. We need to talk about where we're falling short. What are you guys seeing? Open public forum. It's fair for everybody and everybody gets to share. Hey, Mr. So-and-so, you and I need to talk. This is something that I'm noticing, and it's something we together need to address. Those are uncomfortable. Those are very yeah. uncomfortable. But as leaders, we've said this before, we need to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Have you got to the point yet, Jeff, where you've asked that famous question, what's it like being on the other side of me?
Not directly, but I try to. I try to. And I can't wait to actually use that. But here's the example story that I was gonna give, which is my way of sort of getting there. So my personal opinion as a leader is that getting honest, constructive feedback is one of the hardest things to do, because people want to avoid hurting people's feelings and things like that. And I'm more in the mind of like, hey, as long as you're not trying to like insult me or cut me down or take advantage of me, like I more than anything want to know what it's like on the other side of me. So here's an example. So my business partner and I, we talk to clients together all the time, and he's brilliant and we play off each other really well. Well, in between meetings, we were doing a little after action review. And I said to him, I said, hey, we should come up with some sort of like signal over these Zoom calls or whatever, so that when I want to add some context to what you're explaining or vice versa, I'm not cutting you off. Right. So my approach was, look, I don't want to cut you off, and I feel like I'm cutting you off, and you're brilliant. What you're saying is very valid. I just want to support and add to it. And this is why this is a good lesson in leaning towards addressing things, that his response was, I don't feel like you're cutting me off at all. I think it's perfect. So it was something all in my mind about the way I felt like I may have been impeding on him, which turned out not even to be the case.
Yeah.
And oftentimes when we, you know, again, back to being comfortable, being uncomfortable, we play the worst case scenario out in our minds. And very rarely does the worst case scenario of anything actually play out. So
right.
I could have been like, I don't want to address this, because then he's going to call me a jerk for cutting me off. And then, oh, we're going to fall apart and the company's going to break up and our clients are going to leave and we're all going to go poor. You know, like, it's easy to go down that road when, hey, let's just talk about it. I mean, it helps when you have great people around you that you can do this with. So,
yeah. Well, I'll give mine. That's just a great story. I'll give mine real fast. My number one, how do you disqualify yourself from leadership? Character issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, saying inappropriate things, you know, treating the opposite sex poorly, you know, moral failure if you're in ministry, and now we're seeing it in business, you know, financial impropriety, any of those type of things. That'll definitely disqualify you from leadership. Yeah. And there's an old phrase I've learned: it takes a lifetime to build trust, but trust can be lost at a moment in time.
That's right.
And so therefore guard it and protect it. The antidote to that, I think it's two things. Number one, daily quiet times. You have to get, for me, obviously everybody that listens to this knows I'm a Christian. You got to have God lead and guide and direct your life, and let the Bible be the driving force of all human behavior. Second thing is this: accountability. You know, Jeff, you and I have talked, and this is not a new phrase. It's been used countless times by countless number of people. The most dangerous leader is the one who's not accountable to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, accountability, building those guardrails in your life, letting God lead and direct your life. Those are the main things you can do to prevent a character failure. And then once again, sometimes depending on your character, that's still not enough.
Yeah.
But a character failure will lead you to be disqualified from leadership. So that's mine. So Jeff, let's move to your number two, my friend.
So the next one is sort of a real bad one. I'm sure we've all seen it, but you're really going to disqualify your ability to lead others effectively if you blame other people. You know, if you're pointing fingers, if you refuse to take responsibility, and especially if it's not true. Okay, so my story of experience here is, this was years ago. I had a boss that had to call a client and called 15 or 20 minutes late because he'd forgotten. And the first thing he said was, someone on my staff was supposed to remind me. And those of us on a staff were like, we didn't know about this. You didn't tell, you know? And it was just like, okay, well, we're under the bus. So you got to blame others. And this, again, if you're listening here, you're thinking, oh, well, I don't blame people for anything. And usually, getting to the anecdote, usually the anecdote is where the tension lies. All right. So with this one, this is the antidote is definitely to always take responsibility. So real practical, if anything ever goes wrong, if anything other than all right, this is my issue. This is my responsibility. How do we address it? If anything other than that happens, then you start to have that tension. So you can see, you know, there's outright blaming, which is probably easy to see. And yeah, I don't do that, but it's still there if you're not taking complete extreme ownership and responsibility. And look, explaining what happens, you know, so if you have a product issue with a client or something breaks down in a process and, you know, you're accountable to other people, whether it's customers or superiors, explaining where things went wrong and how it happened is perfectly okay. But as the leader, you say this was on me.
Yeah.
You know, this slipped through the cracks or this process failed here because I didn't do whatever the case is. And I mean, you have to be a true spokesperson for those around you and take the responsibility. And so again, if that's not your first impulse, then that's how you should check on the anecdote. Cause it's not easy. Again, very uncomfortable with if something goes wrong. The first thing you say is, where did I fail here?
Yeah.
Because we all want to say, well, it ain't my fault. That's human nature.
And Jeff, this is such a good one. You know, and then I'm going to ask your advice on a particular issue that many leaders have faced. But obviously, as a leader, you know that, hey, if something goes wrong, it's my fault. If something goes great, it's the team's win. You know,
yeah,
they're the reason for the success. I'm the reason for the failure. That's just the fine print of the leadership contract when you sign it, you know,
that you
take that. And the reason, Jeff, that is such a good point, because here's what happens when you do that and your team sees it like you did in that story, then you know that leader's out to serve themselves, not serve others not serve the team. And at that point as a team member, you're like, okay, I got to get on another team, or something of that nature. Here's a question I got for you. So let's say you're in sales, or let's say you got a military unit, or let's say that you're a coach and you're coaching a team, and everybody's got to achieve at a certain level for the team to achieve its goals. And it's very obvious there's a weak link on the team. And it's very obvious that that individual, you know, was not the total reason you missed the goal, but on paper, they're the reason you missed the goal. Okay. Then the person you report to comes to you and wonders why your team didn't hit its numbers or didn't reach its goal, or didn't carry out its assignment, whatever your industry is. How should a leader handle that when they know, quote unquote, Bob's the reason that we missed the goal? How should a leader handle that?
Great question. This really builds that anecdote, because that's, you know, that's the poignant example of what we see here and how you can train yourself to not, you know, not disqualify yourself in this way. So the way I'd answer that is, look, things happen that are out of control. You know, things actually do happen that are sometimes not our fault, or that we couldn't have helped, or we tried our best, or whatever the case.
Mm-hmm.
But I would encourage someone with sort of two highlights. I would encourage them, one, to, you know, even before you have that conversation with the superior or the athletic director or whatever, just think about the context of how that could possibly be your responsibility. So let's use a real hard example on sales. I trained the person. We had counseling. I gave them the script. I was right there with them. Again, the deeper this goes, the harder it gets, the more tension there is. And that's why we take the tough jobs as leaders. But always frame it that way, no matter what the truth is. And again, this is why I said you could explain it, but you have to take responsibility. No matter what what the truth is, or no matter who you're talking to, if the response is, I did all they could, without the context of, you know, I really should have done this. I could have done this. We could have approached this. I should have moved into this section, you know, but at the end of the, I mean, you can include the truth. It's not that you have to fall on the sword, but this will combat even appearing like you're trying to blame someone else if you first frame it as to what was in my control.
Right.
This is what I did to avoid it. And ultimately, this is what I did, and it wasn't enough. And it could be that simple.
Yeah, and I think what you did there, Jeff, and that answer you gave, which was just a great answer, for lack of a better phrase, there's a pace analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we're not suddenly blindsided because we're at the end of the month and something happened, or the end of a quarter or something like that, or the end of a mission or the end of a game. You know, we were doing coaching and, you know, training and all that all along the way.
Yeah.
So there's a proactivity to your answer. I'll give my second. Once again, real fast, we'll get back to yours. First one was character. Second's competence. I had a job once where I was working in a tractor store selling parts like John Deere. Now, anybody that knows me, Jeff, knows I'm as white collar as it gets. I pay people to change my oil. I pay somebody to do my yard. Great guy, wrong fit. Even though I was the first one in the office, the last one to leave, would help a customer like that. You know, if somebody walked in and said, hey, I need an O-ring on a FX-435, I'm as lost as you're speaking a completely different language.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is, if there's a lack of competence in your field as a leader, that will disqualify you. You simply don't have the skills to do the job.
Yeah.
And that will be apparent to everyone who's on your team. And just like you'll get disqualified for blaming others, not taking responsibility, not addressing issues, lack of character. If you don't have the skills to do the job, you got hired from outside the company. Yeah. You'll be disqualified as well. Yeah. So, all right, number three,
this is probably the most important one that I see kind of time and time again, and you're really going to disqualify yourself from effective leadership if you treat others or believe that others are somehow inferior. This could be everything from not taking their feedback seriously to not soliciting, you know, their take on in their area of expertise, to outright bullying or abuse or just treating people poorly in general. That's sort of the big thing. And as a leader, our job, our role is to seek to serve and support. So I'm here as the leader to support you in what you're trying to do, right? You have to have an inherent appreciation for the value of that teammate, that team member. That person is not inferior, right? No matter what their role, their, you know, whatever it is. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that there are no leadership hierarchies or that every skill set is the same value. That's not true. But what is true is that each one is equally important to the sum of the whole, to the mission itself. You know, Paul in 1 Corinthians uses that metaphor of the body and how, you know, each of us are a different. He's talking about spiritual gifts, but each of us are a different part of that body, the hand and the foot and all these things. We each play a role, and that role is extremely valuable. So to treat otherwise is really going to disqualify yourself. So the antidote here is to just ask questions, ask people for feedback. Again, this is the uncomfortable kind of like my first point, but hey, how am I doing? How are you doing? How are you feeling? Question I like to say is, hey, how do you think it's going?
Yeah.
You know, again, opening trust. Hopefully you have the relationship that you can get honest opinion. So ask yourself with every conversation, I wonder how that person thinks it's going. Or ask yourself, what could I learn from that person?
Yeah.
You can learn something from anybody. And if you take that posture with, what can I learn from them and how do they think it's going? That's the way you walk into every conversation, then you are in fact supporting and serving them.
No, that's excellent. I think my third one goes right along with yours. I said chemistry. You know, there's a phrase called a bad hang. You know, people just don't like hanging out with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't play well with others. You know, there's been a number of phrases like that. But simply put, if you've got a low emotional intelligence, low EQ,
mm-hmm.
you're going to disqualify yourself from leadership. And here's a phrase that I always heard that's great, and it supports everything you said, is, look, most decisions in this world are made about you when you're not in the room.
That's right.
You know, did I get accepted to a college or not? Well, that was made in a room somewhere else at an admissions office. Mm-hmm. You know, Jeff, you're an elder at Piedmont. The decision of, hey, let's ask Jeff to be an elder was made when you weren't in the room and then they came and asked you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, most decisions, promotions are made in an HR office or something like that. They're made when you're not in the room. And if you don't have chemistry, it's like you said, and treat others inferiorly, you know, you're a bully. Yeah, you're going to disqualify yourself. So, yeah, you and I basically got the same one at number three.
Yeah, and that's probably the broadest one, right? So perhaps maybe it's the most valuable one. And so just a little bonus red flag there is we all have conflicts with people. You know, we all disagree, have disagreements, and we don't have to get along kumbaya with everybody. But if you look around and you're the one that has a problem with everybody around you,
yeah,
that's the red flag there. Yeah. You know, you mentioned EQ. So what I'm going to say is a little bit controversial. I understand that some people have a little bit more of that than others, but ultimately I think if someone has a low EQ, it's because they don't care enough about other people to begin with. If you care enough, you're going to pay attention to how that person might feel, which is kind of what EQ is. It's being aware of their kind of emotional or psychological state. And yeah. I think all it really takes is caring there. It's a skill to refine. Certainly there's an awareness to develop certainly, but you probably got to care first.
Yeah. And, you know, just one thing of warning, because sometimes you may care, but you've escalated the process, the product, or whatever you're working on above the person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're so driven to get the job done that you just steamroll everybody in your path. And then you kind of look behind you and like, you know, I've got a strand of broken spirits behind mm-hmm. me. Something I learned too, and then I want to say something too that might also be a little controversial, but, you know, when I was young, Jeff, I would have those courageous conversations. I wouldn't mind being the guy that threw the grenade on the table, you know, and most of the time I positioned it as saying the grenade's already on the table. I just was telling you the pen was out, you know, which was just me deflecting. But, you know, yeah, you might have addressed an issue. You might have, quote unquote, won the argument, you know, but you destroyed the shrapnel is you destroyed trust. Mm-hmm. You destroyed people wanting to work with you in the future. You know, you destroyed a lot of conversations and decisions made about you. You're in rooms you're not in. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're right. I cared more about getting the job done than the people involved, you know. Here's another thing. This is my own personal opinion, and then you can disagree and coach me if you think I'm incorrect on this, which is highly possible. I think the question, is it more important that they like you or respect you, is a question of a bygone era. Hmm. Especially with this younger generation, they have to like you and respect you. I think they're two sides of the same coin. You know, because if they don't like you, if they're not, quote unquote, doing life together, if y'all aren't part of a cause or something bigger than yourself, you know, we're in an issue that they may not work. They just may quit without a job.
Yeah.
You know, because they just don't like the culture. They don't like the environment. You know, they don't want to do that every day of their life. You know, so I think the era I grew up in, I'm 57, the era I grew up in, the answer was you want to be respected.
Yeah.
And I think the era today that my daughter is growing up in, I think it's both. I don't think it's an either or. I think it's an and.
That's really interesting. I never thought about that. So my reaction is I don't disagree with you. I would still say that respect has to come first. Like, so okay. Respect is the requirement, but kind of what you alluded to, we're in an ultimate state of economic freedom right now, right? Where there are more jobs than people. You know, we just went through the pandemic where people proved that we can be productive working from home. So why commute? And so the employee in this case has a lot of power. So you know, they may respect someone, but if they don't like them or like being around them, maybe more specific, then there's just a lot less stickiness, you know, there. Back when, and this is before your time, but back when people held one job for 50 or 60 years and just had to stick with it, yeah, it'd be about respect, because what are you going to do, up and go somewhere else? That was much more rare than it is now. So that's really interesting. And I would tend to agree with you with respect being first. Whether they like you, your personality or not, they have to at least like being around you, which usually equates to feeling respected.
Yeah.
You don't have to like the same football team, or you don't have to go to the same restaurants or go to the same church or that sort of thing, but it should be enjoyable just to kind of be in someone's presence. Because otherwise there's a million options out there for any follower in terms of leaders.
Yeah. Well, I promised everybody at the beginning of this podcast that, you know, I mentioned the phrase guardrails earlier. Jeff's giving you some unbelievable guardrails. And, you know, you need to reduce your hubris, I guess would be, or develop a little humility, and just see if some of these things apply to you. See if they're blind spots. Ask somebody. As Jeff said, have an open forum. You know, address problems directly. Ask what it's like to be on the other side of you. And if you're blaming other people for your mistakes or company performance, my heavens, this is like leadership 101.
Mm-hmm.
But leadership 101 will sink you if you're not doing it. You know, if you're not doing the fundamentals of leadership. And another one is, look, you know, just treat people, you know, as God would have treated, you know, like, treat people with the value that God sees in them.
Yes.
You know,
well said.
Everybody, dignity is imprinted on the heart of every human soul.
Yeah.
So just treat people with dignity, you know, and just do those basic things and watch your character. And if you do those things, then you've got a chance to have a very fruitful season as a leader, as long as God has you in the position you're currently in.
Amen. Amen. Well, and with that, I'll just wrap with, you know, I think our listeners, just the fact that they're listening, you know, they're wanting to learn, they're wanting to grow. So I believe that sense of personal humility of wanting to actually, you know, look and learn is there with our listeners. So take these as an opportunity to say, okay, here are sort of the things that I should be asking and doing to live by the antidotes to these examples of what wrong looks like. Thanks for your input and your comments. Great stuff as always, Brian. Thanks everyone for listening, and remember, serve others, not as a task, but as a purpose.